Hi there, I'm Dan, and I'm a Lego builder at Brick to the Past.
Hi, I'm James Pegram, and like Dan, I'm a brick builder at Brick to the Past.
Fantastic. So Dan, can you just tell me a little bit about Brick to the Past, what the channel's all about and what you guys do?
Yeah, so basically Brick to the Past is basically a group of friends who tend to specialise in building enormous historically themed Lego models, which we put an enormous amount of research in to try and reflect kind of the time or period or event that we're trying to show. We also have various social media channels and a website where we put out regular content of a smaller scale, where we try and look at different historical events and times and people, and really try and generate enthusiasm for history through the medium of Lego.
Perfect. And James, how did you guys actually meet in the first place?
So it was a process more than anything. I was taking part in some shows in Swindon at Steam.
It's a fantastic event.
Yeah, and that's really kind of where I started to get involved with the community. And it must be some 10 years ago, I was doing some work with one of the group, Barney. We did a medieval castle scene. The next year I did another sort of collaboration with another team member, Tom. And kind of at those shows, at the time out when you hang around with each other, we got chatting and said, you know, we should get some more people involved in this. So the following year, more people got involved, and that was the first year that really Brick to the Past came together. That was in 2013. So it was a slow involvement, group of friends, similar interests, went in to build together, and it's gone on from there.
Perfect. And then, Dan, you mentioned that you choose different themes to kind of focus on different events in history. What's the process of choosing what you actually cover and build? Or is it a name out of the hat situation, or is it a big research process? How does it work?
Well, I suppose it's developed over the year, and we kind of throw around our ideas as we come to like the sort of Steam deadline. And then after the show, we go to the pub and we discuss ideas. But usually what we try and do is we try and fit it in with either anniversaries or things that really interest us, which is an important part. If you're going to build a model that is, you know, 7 square meters, you need to have an interest in it, otherwise it's just a rebirth. So, for example, this year we were supposed to be building a big model to commemorate the 400th anniversary of the Voyage of the Mayflower, and the sort of subject matter around that. Of course, COVID has prevented us from building that model. We're still going to do it. We're going to do it next year. So we're going to say 401st anniversary of the Voyage of the Mayflower. But that's quite a sort of typical way we choose to do things. And then once you do a bit of research before like suggesting it, because we need to know if it's feasible or not. But after we like nail a subject, that's when we really kick into the kind of research side of things.
Fantastic. James, obviously with the current situation with COVID, obviously all events have probably been cancelled for you guys for this year. So what are you guys doing to fill your time? Obviously you have your normal day-to-day jobs, but with Lego and with Brick to the Past as the channel, what are you guys working on at the moment?
Well, I think this year's, in some ways, it's changed our focus more from doing the collaboration to providing more content for our website, for our blog, which is then transposed into Twitter and to Instagram. We have kept alive the idea of this anniversary, celebrating this infamous voyage from England to America of the Mayflower. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that I have focused on, possibly more than some of the others. So I've been working quite a bit around that, reading about why they went, and because the show didn't happen this year, and as Dan said, we are looking to be at Steam next year, hoping to.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, exactly. I've thought, right, okay, let's keep this going. Let's keep this this story alive, really. So I've started reading a book recently to fill in my lack of knowledge around what happens once the Mayflower arrived in America or in that area. So Yeah, I think not doing the shows has meant, certainly for Dan and myself, we've spent a lot more time just building different scale models, I think it'd be fair to say, Dan?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's basically concentrating on maybe particular events that have happened. So we've done lots of little quick blogs. So, yeah. Certain things we've done is quite a lot about social history this year, about 19th century radicals and kind of towards democracy. And that's building on last year's blog where we commemorated the 200th anniversary of the Peterloo Massacre. And we're going to, work on from there and talk about things like the Chartists, the radicals in Scotland in 1820, and like moving on to kind of the Great Reform Act of 1832. And so it's kind of those like little bit of things that fill in the gaps that we maybe not necessarily be able to cover when we're building a big model, because a big model does take one hell of a lot of time.
I've seen obviously that the feed will be on the channel of the big builds. What's the process for a big build like that? Do you render it first? Do you do it in like Lego design, or do you just go crazy, go freehand, and just start building?
Well, I think Dan mentioned that we kind of bounce ideas around leading up to Steam, and historically I've tended to try and put together a idea of what a display may look like. Mm-hmm. So that would be like a plan. We've pretty much got an idea how much we like to build to, the sort of size we like to build to. So I put an idea together. Yeah. And then it's a lot easier to discuss that when we've got something on paper and you're together. You can say, well, I like this or I like that. And it evolves from that, really.
Yeah.
And we just build off that idea. I think sometimes we must do 8-9 revisions of the plan. Uh-huh. And that probably doesn't even capture the final model, because people will have their area and then they will work their area to their boundaries. And what they do within that is for them to work through, as long as it blends in with the overall scheme and particularly joins up with their neighbour.
Yes. How you then deal out those particular jobs? Is it based on people's skill level, a personal preference, or does it change depending on what the build can be?
We're lucky to have a lot of very skillful builders, so skill isn't really an issue. It's more down to what you're interested in or what someone's years looking like in terms of their personal commitments, because we don't want to say, oh, no, it's supposed to be fun. So we'll generally take on what we think we're able to and what we think we'll enjoy or are interested. So a few years ago, James was very keen on building a Roman fort as part of the Hagen's Wall model, so he got to do that. I wanted to build the Vicus, the town that sits outside, so I got to do that. And generally, actually, it's worked out quite well for people.
Yeah.
So, there's no fights, let's put it that way.
Great. That's great to hear, because I know when I've collaborated in bigger builds myself, it's always... you get the certain people going for certain elements, like one does the minifigures, one does the big structural builds, one does the garniture and like the trees and the furniture, stuff like that. Whereas it's nice to hear that you guys, you just all chip in together and you just work collaboratively, which is great to hear. One question I ask a lot of people is, why Lego? What is it about Lego that not only interests you guys, but how does it work to get people engaged with history?
When I go first, then?
I could fill it after if you want.
I have been messing around with Lego since I can remember when. I think recently we posted a picture of one of us with a very early model. That was me. that's my first recorded mock. I think I was about 6 or 7.
Yeah.
And it just happened to be historical models, so... I didn't even think of it at the time, but from a very young age, I obviously had an interest in history and Lego, which I was combining together. I think having grown up with an older brother who was very skillful at balsa woods and cutting and doing airfix, I thought, I can't be doing with this. It's too much gluing and it's too messy. And if it goes wrong, I haven't got the patience to put it right. So the beauty from a young age for me was that Lego is very easy to change. If you don't like what you've done, take it apart, you redo it. Yeah. It's not messy.
Build it again, it's fine.
Yeah. And, you know, I often look at models which are sitting there and think, oh, I'd like to change that. So I think that's one of the beauties of Lego as a sort of form of art. It's easy to change. You know, if you've done a painting or something, short starting again, it's very hard to change something you've done. So I enjoy that. And I think bringing Lego and history together has just allowed me to explore my interest in history as well. Mm-hmm. It's become a vicious circle in many respects, because I'll read a book which will give me an idea, I'll start building a model, and then I think, oh, I want to know more about this model or about this subject, so I'll then go and read a book. I mentioned earlier, didn't I, that I've started reading another book about the Mayflower and what they did in America. So it's that cycle for me. It's mm-hmm. I built something, it gets me interested in the subject, I want to know more, so then go and read some more.
Yeah.
And so it just keeps going.
It's that cycle of never stopping to learn, like never stop learning. It's like, just because you finish one project doesn't mean that's it, you finished. It's you can build it, you can rebuild it, amend it, change it, stuff like that. Thanks, yes. Dave. So Dan, in terms for your audience that you kind of attract with Lego, obviously the conception of Lego is it's for children, but we all know it's for everyone. Have you converted anyone at one of your shows from that sort of old school mindset of it's just a toy?
I hope so. I mean the beautiful thing about Lego, and this is following some slightly other thought from what James was saying earlier, is this is an incredibly relatable medium. Mm-hmm. So that's why it works so brilliantly in terms of what we think is generating kind of interest in subject matter, especially with kids. I think a lot of the time with the shows, we get kids come along, they'll have been learning something as part of their kind of history, GCSE or younger, and they'll be able to say, oh yeah, that's that and that's that. And that I think sets a kind of a motion of thought in process, when then they start how something might have been in the past. Mm-hmm. Because yeah, the length is that very relatable object, and usually it's a minifig or a collection of minifigures. And we have had then kids go off and build their own versions of Viking village or a Viking ship and something like that, and then their parents tell us about it, which is great, because to be able to think that your model has had that kind of influence on someone, and that they've gone away and thought about things independently and come up with their own version is a really nice.
Absolutely, and they will remember that forever. That the fact that they've been able to teach their parents something using a tool that they use, that they play with, that they find enjoyable, that mental memory, like they will remember that when they're an adult. They'll be in your position teaching other people about how to build with Lego and how to kind of influence. And if it's not history, it could be geography, it could be science, it could be English, it could be literally anything. It's, as you said, it's such a universal tool. It can be kind of used for any medium, which is fantastic. So obviously you guys have worked on some really, really big projects. I'll ask you both individually. James, what's been your favourite project you've worked on so far?
I think it would probably be Tegelfa, which was the medieval scene with the castle.
Mm-hmm.
I love Romans. I equally love castles. So being able to go around lots of castles in England and Wales and enjoy pouring over them to get ideas and then
go bad job.
It. Yeah, it was great. So I really enjoyed that just because I love castles. But it's a very hard one to answer, because whilst I've not always wanted to necessarily pick the choice, like Victorian London wasn't a choice that I would have gone for, I love building that as well, because it was a completely new style of building mm-hmm. for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, every build has had its own kind of joy.
And every build is unique for you guys as well, I guess, to be covering the entire space, like span of time. Mm-hmm. As you said, Victorian London's completely different to like a Roman forum, like in terms of architecture, colour, style, minifigures, it's great.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, you asked me, it would be Tegelfa, but it is a very hard one to answer because they've all had their own enjoyable aspects.
Yeah. Perfect. Thanks, James. And Dan, same question.
It's, again, it's a difficult one because I think I'd give a different answer depending on how I was feeling or, you know, what day of the week it was. But the Hadrian's Wall model always has a particular fondness for me because that's the first large model I built. And actually, it was discovering the little Roman soldier minifigure that got me into Lego originally. So being able to kind of to build this World Heritage site that I visited as a kid, and also we did field trips out to it when we were researching the Lego build, but to have that come together was you know, I'm really pleasing. It's still one of the models that I think I would like to try again at some point, because I've learned things since then, learned different techniques. Might be nice to try something else.
Perfect. And I know everyone's going to be, where do you buy your Lego? Where do you keep it? Is it in your house? Is it in your garden? Tell us the process of the actual. So you think of the project, you know what you need. Obviously, if you can't share the website, absolutely fine. But kind of what's that process from start to finish?
Well, I was going to say most of our parts are from a mixture of places. I'd say most of it's Bricklink, but occasionally you'll get a better price straight from the Lego sort of pick a brick type website thing. It's really a matter of shopping around and seeing what's best. Bricklink is good because obviously you get stuff that is no longer produced, so if you need that's kind of rare, it's good. One of the problems I suppose we have is it's a challenge. It's designing minifigures. Minifigures are suitable for the time that we're trying to create. And it's often that you need to really delve back to those old sets that aren't available anymore, those old minifigures that aren't available anymore to achieve that.
Yeah. So I think James has built a very lifelike Lego cat that's come to join.
Yeah, he wants to join in.
Super cute. I say, with the minifigures, roughly for your Hadrian's Wall build, how many minifigures are used in that particular piece?
I don't remember that. I could tell you the two. Well, I could give you a rough estimate of the Jacobite one.
Yeah.
That was roughly 2,500.
Oh, wow. That
one. I think that's the biggest set of minifigures we've had. And I think we were close to the Peterloo one because we did try and simulate a crowd of 60,000 people, but we
wow.
Obviously, not fewer minifigures than that, but it was definitely close to 2,000 there as well.
Yeah.
But that's a lot of us coming together. You know, we can't sort of thing as an individual unless you've got very deep pockets.
They're not the cheapest figures, I must say. So, in terms of what once the build is finished, what do you do with it? Obviously, I've seen on your website that you rent out some of the smaller models and some of the more detailed pieces that are kind of easier to ship. In terms of those big, large-scale ones with the 2,500 minifigures, where are they now?
In pieces. the Jacobite model did go on a little tour, so that went to Stirling Castle on the spot. And then little bits of it, which were modular, went on to different places. But by and large, they come apart and get turned into the model for the modelling.
Perfect. And Dan, I can see to your right, you have some storage units. Are you okay just to show a couple of them to the camera? But maybe I'll ask James a question. If you can choose your most interesting pieces that you have there, either minifigures or bricks, set you a little challenge. Just favourite piece and why. So, James, when you obviously Dan mentioned that you do, like some of the models have gone on tour. Is it a case of, do they approach you? Do you approach them? What's that sort of process in terms of getting the model out there?
Generally, organisations or businesses or, you know, museums approaching us. So we've had two that have gone on display, the Anglo-Saxon build and the Jacobite one. We have had people come and ask us to make things specifically for them. So we were asked to build a Brock, for example, which Dan and myself were able to put together and... Mm. We were able to do that as a commission, but yeah, generally people would approach us.
And that's from seeing your work on social media and then Steam, I assume?
I think so, yeah. It's interesting how you get known or you get heard. These things, I guess, get pushed around the internet some way. You know, someone from outside the community picks up on our work. They might share it within their own sort of hobby or interest or specialisation. So yeah, these things can travel quite far and wide without you knowing sometimes.
And your builds, as we've said, they're so detailed and yet so big. Because you often find the really big builds sometimes lack the detail because it's just about, they're just showing off the size of the model. Whereas yours is just, there's so much storytelling and so much intricacy to it. That's, it just takes your breath away. Not, I mean, unfortunately, I've not been able to see one of your pieces in real life because I think when I went to Steam, I'm not sure if you were either not there that year or I was actually exhibiting myself, so I may not have been able to catch you guys. But I couldn't imagine seeing that the Roman build with the temple and stuff like that. That is just an enormous build, and to see that visually, if you were a child seeing that, I would not be able to control myself. It would just be an epic performance. So Dan, I see you have a box.
Yeah, I have a box. You set me a difficult challenge because I'm not entirely sure if I've got a favourite box, but. I think actually a jumper plate, a simple jumper plate, like that, is. It's one of my most used parts because it's the ability to do various kind of offset effects on your buildings or walls, or basically take your buildings off the grid. Which is something that we try and do quite a lot because obviously Lego is a grid, which means people tend to build in those straight, right angled sort of way. We always try and put those off the interesting angles. So the way to do that, if you want to stick simple plates, is jumper plates. So they're incredibly versatile.
Yeah, and I say for those that aren't particularly aware of how jumper plates work. You're essentially turning two studs into one stud. So you kind of then, as you said, taking it off the grid, making it into almost an irregular pattern so you can start to do all sorts of weird and wonderful things with roof tiles, for little characters, you can like start to make armor for them and like a nose, glasses, all sorts of, basically whatever your imagination can do with them, to be honest. Fab. Finally, we're going to finish off, guys. In terms for kind of, obviously, you've got a massive following, all down to your passion for the work, your kind of what you can physically build, like the skills that you've got is incredible. The amount of research that you put into your projects is truly commendable. If I was a brand new Lego builder wanting to kind of showcase my work on either Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, but I didn't really know where to start. What would you kind of recommend as a initial stage for me to kind of get started? James, what do you think?
I think probably start small. If you're going to go too big, you're going to probably get discouraged quite quickly.
Yeah.
You can't detail as well as you can on a large scale as a small scale because you need all those extra parts, and with that comes knowing the parts. So, you know, if you go too big too quickly, you probably will become discouraged and probably just keep working at it. I mentioned earlier about looking at something and changing it. I think it takes time. You're not going to instantaneously be the best builder. There's a lot of techniques out there which you're only going to find out by playing around yourself, by looking at the people's builds. So if you do it on a small scale, play around, look at it, look at other people's work, refine it, change it, and just keep working at it. You know, it takes time, but you know, I've got young kids and whatever they're working at, one's just started skateboarding and you know, he keeps working at the same things. Mm. So you have to be patient as well. And he's getting it, you know, he's getting new tricks, and take my hat off to him. I can't use a skateboard for my life. But, you know, it transposes into, I think, whatever you do. And the same would be true for Lego.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks, James. Dan, anything else to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think start small is the most important thing, to be honest. But,
yeah.
But also, equal to that, would be to build something you're interested in.
Yeah.
And go for that. From a kind of perspective of someone who builds historical models, research is always important. All of us have kind of inbuilt ideas of what the past might look like, which tend to be somewhat biased and romanticized. You know, you get influenced by things in movies or your books you read and things like that. So do thorough research to make sure you're not, you're creating something that is authentic or at least as fair as you possibly can. And also spend, if you can put stuff on kind of Instagram or whatever, it's worth investing in a good set of lights to take, because it makes life a whole lot easier, like something fun. And then get used to, you know, the editing software as well. And you can get GIMP for free and learn how to use the levels, learn how to use curves, and you'll get some very nice sharp images at the end. And that's something that'll get your channel noticed if that's what you're interested in.
Fantastic. Guys, thank you so much. James, where can people get in contact with you?
We've got our own website, britsofthepast.com. On there you'll find our details. We've got our own email address. You can find us on Twitter. Find us on Instagram, so they're probably the best places. Oh, and Facebook. So yeah, you can use any of those three to contact us on.
Lovely.
So, yeah.
And
Dan,
we usually get back to people pretty quickly as well. So and you know, they're always welcome.